This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
In the world of activism, we tend to split into two branches. One attacks the existing human system, things like globalization, the World Bank, and social inequality. The other protests our destruction of nature while struggling to create a pathway to a survivable future. Our guest is one of those rare souls who marries both together. Dr. Kevin Danaher is the author, co-author, and editor of 11 books. Some expose the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the cabal of the 1%. Others lay out the grassroots of a greener world. Kevin co-founded the Global Exchange, long dedicated to social justice, but he also founded and continues to share leadership of green festivals in major American cities, including Los Angeles and New York, and coming up, Washington, D.C., at the end of May 2014. He's an activist in San Francisco as well, where he founded Friends of the SF Environment. Kevin's Ph.D. from the University of California is in sociology. Kevin Danaher, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks for having me on, Alex. I appreciate it.
I'll be honest, we couldn't cover the things you've done and do in a day, much less the time we have, but why don't we start with this? Many of us desperately hope we can avert a climate disruption in our lifetimes, and you've talked about this, asking if humanity can save itself, so let's go for the big one right off the bat. Can we?
Well, yes, definitely. Our approach is we consider ourselves solutionaries, and we encourage people to think of themselves as solutionaries. Solutionaries look at a problem and see the solution within the problem. So, for example, the September issue of National Geographic has a cover story about ocean levels. And it shows that if all the ice on the planet melts, which it does seem to be doing, it raises ocean levels over 200 feet. So you think about Vancouver and San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York and Havana and Shanghai, all these major cities are right on the ocean or on a river that feeds into the ocean. So what we look at is things like eco-levees. Eco-levees would be large mounds of rammed earth with saltwater-tolerant plants on the ocean side, bike trails, fruit trees, park benches on top like a long park, and terraced urban agriculture on the inland side. And, you know, the problem is when I raise this with adults, most of the adults say, oh, but that's off in the future. We're talking about our grandchildren or maybe the children of our grandchildren. And we don't want to be bad ancestors. We think of ancestors as people that came before us, but we're ancestors too, and we need to be good ancestors. So all of these problems, in fact, create opportunities for green enterprise, for a new kind of economic model that is in tune with Mother Nature and makes better profits by saving the environment than by destroying it. That's a different economic model.
Well, there has been a divide between economic activists talking about things like the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank and environmentalism. What do you tell Greens about the need to deal with things like globalization and big financial institutions?
Well, it's very similar to when the discussion of solar energy or wind energy comes up. I always raise the issue, are we talking about massive, concentrated solar and wind, or are we talking about small, distributed renewables? Because if it's huge, that means either big government or big corporations, and that's anti-democratic in its very structure. Those institutions are hierarchies. They have all sorts of multiple levels of decision-making where it's really hard for people to participate or to penetrate and even understand. I have a Ph.D. in sociology. I wrote a dissertation on U.S. foreign policy. I know about bureaucracy. When it's small and local and controlled by local communities, there's much greater potential for democratic participation. When it's huge and requires a lot of money and it's all concentrated in one place, that's problematic, as we've seen in so many, you know, nuclear power, fracking, all these other areas. So what we're trying to do with the Green Festival is to show the public, we get tens of thousands of people attend, that the solutions exist already. It's not something off in the future. It's just that they tend to be smaller companies. They need capital. They're not huge. They're growing, and they have the technology, the techniques, the materials. It's just they need some capital investment, and that's what we're hoping to do with this consumer event, is get the public in there, get them supporting these companies, because these companies have the solutions.
Well, I've got lots of questions for you about the Green Festival, and that's going to be one of our focus of our talk here today. But I do want to ask you, I mean, Princeton just released a study saying America is an oligarchy, not a democracy. Is democracy dead, Kevin?
No, I don't think democracy is dead. We just need to get back to the original definition. It comes from two Greek roots, demos, meaning people, and kratos, meaning rule. People rule. Here in the United States, we're a democratic republic, and republic comes from two Latin roots, res, meaning thing, and publica, meaning of the people. A thing of the people where the people rule. Well, do the people rule? No, money rules. So we do have an oligarchy, but we can see that, we can document it. I'm pushing the idea of having members of Congress wear uniforms, because police, firefighters, every public servant wears a uniform. If Congress wore uniforms, they could look like NASCAR jumpsuits with the decals of the corporate donors in relative size to the amount of money they get, and that would bring transparency to government. Picture a hometown meeting where the member of Congress or your parliament comes home for a meeting in the community, and there's about six or seven life-size cardboard cutouts out in front with their uniform on. The media would eat that up. It would be on the front page of every newspaper and every TV show. So we have the ability, if we mobilize, if we educate and mobilize the public, to take back the concept of people rule. That's what we've lost.
Right. I just love this idea, the Koch brothers symbol on the outside of the politician instead of on the inside of the politician. Now, do you expect this infinite growth system has to crash before we can get the changes that we need for, say, a green economy, or can we make it somehow?
Well, I think it's actually crashing. Every biological system on the face of this planet is in a state of collapse. Topsoil erosion. In the U.S., we lose between 2 billion and 8 billion tons of topsoil a year. Ocean levels rising, rainforest being cut down. CO2 levels haven't been this high in over 3 million years. Temperature going up, it's changing agriculture, bugs are spreading to places where they didn't go before. So the system is collapsing, whether you measure it in those environmental criteria or if you look at inequality, the richest 1% of American families own more wealth than the poorest 90%. You can't have real democracy or development, democratic development, with that kind of inequality. So the system is sort of in the middle of a crash, but we're in the middle of a transition. There's a new system being developed that's based on a triple bottom line. Instead of the single bottom line of just profit, it's social justice, the equity question, environmental restoration, not just conservation, because we've destroyed so much we have to restore it, and financial sustainability, what's usually called profit. I like to call it financial sustainability. Global Exchange, where I work, is a nonprofit, but we use enterprise. We have fair trade stores. We do reality tours. We publish books. We do events like the Green Festival. And that's enterprise, but it's not enterprise for me to become a gazillionaire. It's enterprise to change the world and to save humanity from self-destruction.
So for those who have never been, what is a Green Festival? What can we expect there?
Well, if you came to a Green Festival in New York, Chicago, D.C., San Francisco, Los Angeles, what you would see is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of solar energy companies and wind energy companies and eco-flooring companies and all sorts of food companies that are mixing the best organic ingredients based on the science of what's good for your body. People don't realize that eating sugar is really bad for you, and sugar is in so much of what we eat and all the junk food and McDonald's and all that kind of stuff. So we're exposing people to the next economy. The next economy is going to be a green economy. And it's not just consumerism, because we have speakers, we have films, we have do-it-yourself, where we show people, if you want to put solar panels on your house, here's how you do it. If you want to grow vegetables in your backyard, here's the easiest way to do it. So it's empowering people, equipping them to make a transition to the next system. You can either live in the world as it is, which is a mess, or the world as it could be, which is this green world. And once people make that realization that they can jump to that new system and live their life in a more sustainable way, it unleashes a lot of spiritual energy, and people get fired up with these new ideas and new technologies. So I think we're in transition. We're actually experiencing the first ever global revolution. Every revolution until now was a national revolution where the revolutionary sought to gain power in the capital city to run that country differently. This is a global values revolution where we're saying instead of having money values rule over the life cycle, we need to have life values rule over the money cycle. And that's a fire alarm going off in the building.
Are you planning on evacuating right now?
No, they announced that they were going to do a test. Sorry.
Okay, well, there's a fire alarm going off in the world building right now, and that's about climate change and about a lot of issues that we have. So, look, Kevin, some of our listeners I know will have doubts about things like the Green Festival. They consider them another form of consumption, another platform to advance consumption. How do you handle that objection?
Well, what we've talked to people about is, look, everybody buys stuff. You buy toilet paper and shoes and shirts and carpet and bedding and mattresses and siding for your house and paint and all this other stuff. So you can either buy the clean, green stuff that's not going to hurt other people and other living things, or you can continue buying this garbage that's destroying us. We in the United States are the most wasteful people on the planet. We're less than 5% of the world's population, consuming about 25% of the world's resources and putting out a little more than 25% of the world's pollutants. We've got to change. We have a special responsibility to the rest of the world. We have 865 military bases outside of our country. We have 240 military golf courses that I'm paying for with my taxes. If people would wake up to these facts and start acting accordingly, we'd get a different kind of government. We wouldn't have these Republicans in Congress who say they don't believe in climate change like it's Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny or something like that. It's not about believing. It's called science. It's been proven. Thousands of PhD glaciologists, oceanographers, etc., are saying, look, we can't keep going the way we're going. So we're approaching that fork in the road, and as Yogi Berra said, when you come to the fork in the road, take it, especially if you want to eat. I think we're at a really great point in history where we get a chance to save our species from self-destruction. No other species has that ability to foresee its own demise and then to take corrective action to make sure that that does not happen.
It's kind of a good news, bad news situation. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with one of America's notable environmental and social activists, Kevin Danaher. On May 31st, you'll be giving a keynote talk at the Green Festival in Washington, D.C. What will you be talking about?
Well, I'm going to be talking about these very things, and I'll be also letting people know that we've got a bunch of new aspects. Green Festival's been around for 13 years now. We've done 8 different cities across the U.S., and we're introducing a Green Festival Brand Award to celebrate the companies and brands that are transforming the way we live. We're having a Super Green Consumer Prize for, like, the best consumer in the show. And we're also having a Green Festival Community Award that goes to a local nonprofit organization, $5,000 for a local nonprofit organization that's doing the best work locally. So lots of good things going on, and, you know, we've been a leader. This is the largest and longest-lasting green economy show in the United States, and actually my project is to try and take it into a real estate model. You go to any city in the United States and you say, where's the store where I can see all the green products in one place? It doesn't exist yet, and that's way overdue. So what we're trying to do first in San Francisco and then roll it out to other cities is have a building that would have all of these local green fair trade and salvage companies, companies that are doing upcycling, taking stuff out of the waste stream like TerraCycle in New Jersey, and making good products out of what otherwise would have gone to the landfill. Those three categories, green, fair trade certified, and salvage companies, they want you to know the story of where their product came from and what was the impact socially and environmentally. The stuff that's dependent on pollution and sweatshops in China, they want to hide the GMOs. They're fighting the companies like Monsanto. They're fighting having GMO labeling. Hey, if it's such great technology, you should be bragging about it and want it on your label. No, they don't, because they know that people are wary about this stuff. So the transparency economy is coming, and it's going to be here soon.
Well, I'd like to return just for a second to your other persona, the veteran social justice advocate and corporate critic. I worry, have corporations totally taken over now?
Well, if you look at, I know the United States best, and I think maybe Canada isn't quite as bad off as the United States, but they took over the healthcare system. We have a massive problem with our healthcare system being unaffordable for most people. They took over the food system. They're polluting everybody's bodies with this horrible food you shouldn't eat. They took over the agriculture system. It's all about mining the soil and dumping chemicals on it to goose the soil to produce more soy, wheat, corn, you know, these products that are mostly used to feed animals, actually. And they've taken over the public media, the public airwaves, which we are the landlord. We, the people, are the landlord. They're the tenant. They don't pay us any rent. They get to use the public airwaves for free and pollute our minds with all this commercial advertising. And now they've taken over the government. And I don't know if you've seen these recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings where they've taken the cap off of any kind of restriction on donations by rich people to politicians. So that means that the rich have access, and I've experienced this myself. One of my major donors, I was complaining about this one time, and he said, oh, well, just call the senator up. And I said, he's not going to talk to me on the phone. And he said, sure, watch. And he calls up, and as soon as they hear his name, because he can pop a $60,000 check real easily, he gets the senator on the phone. But the average citizen is not going to be able to have access to a member of Congress. So we've got a very skewed system here, and we need to find ways to take it back. And what I'm pushing is the idea of separation of corporations and the state. The United States, our political system was founded on the principle of separation of church and state. And that protects religion from government control, and it protects government from being taken over by religion. There's a deeper principle underneath that, and that is that no one institution, in this case religion, should take over government, but no one institution, corporations, should take over government either. So we should have separation of corporations and the state. And that would be no campaign financing, no revolving door of employment where Dick Cheney is in government, goes into corporation, goes back to government, goes back to corporation. And what these guys do is they're selling to the corporation their contacts inside the government. And there's a long list of corruption charges that have eventually been brought against people who did this kind of using their connections to fatten their own bank account. And it's the definition of corruption. And actually, there are federal statutes making this illegal. If they were enforced, all members of Congress would be in jail because they say anything of value given with the intent to influence policy is a corruption crime. Well, that goes on all the time. I used to live in Washington. You see it going on in the halls of Congress all the time. So this is about mobilizing the citizenry, and whether it's, you know, the Occupy movement on the left or the Tea Party people on the right, they're all saying, let's get control of government back.
All right, we're just about at the end of our time, but I would like you, if you could, tell us about the Green Guardians.
Yeah, the Green Guardians is a youth group that we've started in San Francisco, and we've started with urban agriculture at Mission High School. It's a high school right near my office. I started doing volunteer work there. It's an amazing high school, public high school. Principal is just this incredible visionary leader. There's 60 nonprofit groups, all sorts of, you know, teen pregnancy and urban agriculture, and there's a bike shop where if the kids build their bikes, they get to keep the bike. And what we're trying to do is create a model that could be scaled out to other schools and other communities where we teach young people these urban survival skills of urban agriculture and tree planting and water conservation and recycling and composting, because most people live in cities now. We're an urban species. So we have to solve this challenge of sustainability in the urban environment. And you see it going on sort of piecemeal in different places, but a lot of times it's called, you know, the Green School Program or something like that, whereas Green Guardians is something they can identify with. They have T-shirts, you know, and they can say to other kids, hey, you know, we're doing this sidewalk, we're tearing out this cement, and we're putting in gardens. every time we're out working in our sidewalk gardens, when people walk by, they comment, oh, it's so much better than that cement, that ugly cement. The city benefits, and the city gave us the money to take out the cement in the sidewalks because they want to get rainwater down into the aquifers and recharge the springs, because nature gives us millions of gallons of rainwater free, and we treat it as waste and put it in the sewers and run it through a treatment plant. It's ridiculous. We need to get it in the ground. So things like that really charge kids up. And my kids, when you give them a chance between being in a high school classroom, sitting at a desk, or being outside digging in the dirt, they'll take outside almost every time.
As we part company, Kevin, can you give us the details of what's coming up for the Green Festival and the websites or social media spots where people can tune in?
Sure. It's greenfestivals.org. Very simple. Greenfestivals with an S, .org. And there they can see our New York show, our D.C. show, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, the companies, the speakers, the kinds of awards we give out. And we're hoping that this will encourage people to not be despondent about the future. We can change this, but we have to get motivated. We have to get off our butts, turn off the TV, and get out there and be activists. We remind people all the time that the center post of your washing machine that gets the dirt out, it's called an agitator. And we need to be agitators. The correct position of a democratic citizen's mouth is open and demanding action for change of our leaders. So, yes, it's a consumer event. Yes, it's a green economy event, but it's also an activist event where we're trying to empower people to change the world and save our species from self-destruction.
Dr. Kevin Danher is many times an author, co-founder of many organizations, including Global Exchange and America's Green Festivals. You can find links to his upcoming talk, The Green Festivals, and more in my weekly show blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.info. I'm Alex Smith saying, Kevin, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.